Hi guys, welcome back to Articulating BPD and Me. It's been just over a year since I've been on this platform and this podcast, and I'm coming back with a few changes in the last year, but also it's just been amazing to see inboxes and messages from people who've listened saying that I've helped them in some way or another, or helped them understand someone that they love. So I am seeing your messages. I'm sorry if I haven't replied or haven't accepted messages because of my profile being private or for whatever reason, but just know that they haven't gone unseen. And I've decided to jump back on here for a few reasons. One being I miss doing the podcast. I miss having this outlet for not only my mental health, but to help others or to reach out to others that are maybe undiagnosed or experiencing similar symptoms. I've also jumped back on here, I think because I've got my passion back for it. And because a lot has happened in the last year, and that's why I took some time off, and some of it good, a lot of it good, actually, and some of it bad, but that's life. And so I've decided to jump back on after all this time to kind of, as always, speak about my experience, but rather than just going through my diagnosis and things that you might experience by having borderline or BPD, I've decided to start this new chapter. Let's call it season two, and any ongoing seasons, and we're just going to be a bit, little bit more open, discussed on any things that have happened in my life and contributed to some symptoms of borderline being exacerbated, but also moments in my life that I've won or overcome, and things that I didn't believe that I would be able to achieve, let's say, or react in a way that wasn't extreme. So things that have been a truth for me in the past, I've seemed to have overcome in the last year. And there's a few contributions to this. I'm currently not seeking treatment, which I would not advise in any way whatsoever. I'm not a psychologist. I am not sharing this information in hopes of helping someone gain diagnosis, and nor am I advising that if you are diagnosed to self-treat in any way whatsoever. It was just circumstantial that I've been self-treating for about 12 months now. And it is not advised. There are definitely moments where I do need that professional help. And again, it is just circumstantial that I'm not at this stage receiving any of it. There also was a lack of motivation for me to find a new psych. Due to losing a few in the past, going through quite a few, and of course, with borderline, is that fear of neglection and rejection. So that's something that has been triggered for me with psychiatric and psychological help, but it's definitely something that I am looking at getting back into. My perspective with treating my borderline is to take things slowly. So I'm trying to take things slowly, in terms of not overloading myself and not overcommitting. That goes to all aspects of my life. So whether it be work or a training or something as simple as finding a psychologist or calling a psychologist, I'm trying to break down each task that I do into smaller ones. Just so that I don't get overwhelmed and I'm more likely to end up in that destabilized emotional place. And I think that's kind of been the biggest thing I've had to learn over the last year, especially with, applying the DBT and CBT skills, myself. And I mean, I've had a whole bunch of circumstances in which I've been extremely emotionally vulnerable over the last year, and I've definitely overcome some of the hardest challenges
I could have ever imagined. So I am returning to this podcast. I'm not going to say with fresh eyes because I'm still learning about my diagnosis, and there are definitely things that happen each day that blow my mind because I've become aware of how ingrained in my personality they are. And it's all as a result of certain events in my life that have made me the way that I am and caused me to be in a victim state as such. But there's definitely a clearer outlook on not only my diagnosis but my responses, both emotional and physical, as well as how I react in situations. I've become a lot more aware by taking that step back, which sounds easy, right? I think to most people that sounds like the most logical thing in the world. You know, when something happens, don't react, step back and look from a different perspective. And it's something that I can easily advise others to do. But when it comes to myself and something that really causes an emotional trigger or causes me to be dysregulated in some way because it's not going to plan or it's not matching up to the narrative that I've created in my head, I very rarely step back, or I've shown myself that I very rarely step back and reflect in a different way before reacting. Often my reactions are immediate, and I wouldn't say without cause because that's disqualifying my emotions, and we're not here to do that. I do recognize that although my reactions may seem over the top, to me they feel like they deserve that response. So a lot has happened in the last year, and where I'm looking at going with this for the next few seasons, or however long this goes on for, is to talk about not only how I've grown and learnt about my borderline and how I'm coping with it, especially being unmedicated and without proper medical help, which again, not things that I'm recommending you do because it has been a very, very difficult year. But I think it's also given me an opportunity to learn so much about myself and my diagnosis, and also feel a little bit more in touch with my sub-diagnoses and my presumed diagnosis of bipolar. And it's let me definitely see and watch responses and whether they're happening chemically or emotionally. It's been something. So just to give you guys a rundown, the most major life change in the last year is that I'm in a relationship, a healthy, stable, adult, real life relationship. And, you know, we've gotten engaged and we're moving on to the next steps of our lives, which are just on pause at the moment due to other circumstances. But yeah. That has been probably my starting point for this journey. He does definitely deal with the major things. that's not really explaining the best. He does deal with most of my emotional destabilization. Which of course is a big thing with borderline. Romantic relationships are a huge trigger for a lot of reactive and unstable responses. A lot of mood switching or shifting, or what is called fraction thinking. So those are most prominent within a romantic relationship, and it's not saying that these things don't happen with any relationship in my life, because they do, definitely with friends and parents and feeling neglected or rejected by siblings or cousins because they can't make a certain event or do a catch-up or whatever it is. I'm definitely still having that reaction. It's just not as extreme as it is with my partner. And he's a very, I'd say not unstable. He's got a lot of emotion, as I do. And I think one of the coolest things, or one of the most amazing things, which I know I'm genuinely so lucky for, because this guy actually loves me, is watching him be able to deactivate his reactive state for me, because he now knows enough about not only me but about borderline to know that him reacting with aggression or him reacting with whatever he needs to feel in the moment can't always come first, and he does put himself second. And I think, as amazing as it is, there is also guilt that I carry about that, which I'm still learning to cope with. For him, it's just become second nature, but obviously, he is also human and his feelings are valid. And I think a lot of the time, as someone with borderline, they do become invalid. It doesn't matter what he feels, because I feel more, or I need more in that situation, or I am going to be in a complete state if you don't give me what I need. And I definitely can see, I don't completely understand because I'm not in his position. I can see how difficult it must be to, in the moment, even if I'm absolutely reacting to something or a narrative that I've created in my head, for him to be able to put aside how he's feeling and put my response first. I can't even imagine how difficult that would be, because as empathetic as people are with BPD, and we're known to feel more and generally be empaths, I think most of us can definitely testify to the fact that once you're emotionally destabilized, you are completely selfish. And it's not something that you obviously do on purpose, and it is not something you go out with the intention of doing. It is that you are almost blindsided to the people around you needs and what response they may need in that moment, because you are feeling a certain way and you are feeling like it is the end of the world. So I guess we're going to talk about my relationship in this episode. Which is a great starting point, because I think that's been a big attribute to me staying consistent with my recovery in the last year. It's also been eye-opening to a lot of events from my childhood, which now clarify why I have such a severe diagnosis of borderline and have experienced some absolutely, I guess, shocking, when I look back on it, behaviors, especially with past relationships, and the things that I reacted to, and almost becoming another person completely, and making them feel like there was no way out. So, if they ever listen to this, I am sorry. I didn't understand at the time. It was not only pre-diagnosis, but it was pre me really understanding me and why I am the way I am. And that is something that has only come to light within the last year, within going to a second lockdown. So having to not only deal with the stress of not being financially stable, not knowing where I would be staying in that time due to being around someone else that was not okay in their mental health, and the strictness of the lockdown here in Sydney for the second time in terms of kilometres that you could travel, but also dealing and coping with starting a new relationship and finally discovering what my childhood trauma was. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on at once. And I honestly don't know how I've managed it. I think there was a whole series of things that allowed me to finally build a strong relationship with someone. And one of them was my diagnosis and being able to understand myself a little more, not feeling so much like an outsider because I've been participating and listening to other people in the borderline community who had gone through similar journeys. All those messages, they've helped as well, made me feel like I'm a little less crazy, which I'm not using that word as much anymore to describe myself, which is nice. It's actually really nice, and I think that's an act of self-love that I've come to terms with. But yeah, I don't know whether it was just me knowing more or finding the right person, but I'm grateful for whatever it was. And I think here's a big attribute to how I coped with the other things going on in my life at that time, which were the second lockdown and not really having a place to call home at that stage. And he did give me that safety for being able to experience and relive the memories of my childhood. But I definitely put in the work myself, and I'm not going to invalidate that, nor does he, because as much as he could physically be there, he couldn't be in my head stopping any of the thoughts and the emotions, the erraticness, the almost manic states that those memories put me in. And I mean, people with CPTSD would also understand where I'm coming from in that. Not that I've been diagnosed with that, and not that I'm giving myself that diagnosis, but from seeing other people who do cope with CPTSD, and their response mechanism is very much similar to how I respond. And it did help having someone there, seeing that disassociated state and what I was like, and being able to retell that story to me, for me to better understand not only what was happening, what had happened, but better understand how I'm going to deal with it from that point. And to clarify, one of my emotional responses when I got triggered or started remembering something was to revert back to that point of my life. So let's say, an example from real life is a memory from when I was about 5 years old. And at the time when I remembered, the last thing I remember saying to my partner is, I can't remember this. I don't want to remember this. And that's kind of where I black out. I don't really remember what's happened in the next hour or so after that. But from having him be able to be so solid and not emotionally react to my state and just give me a transcript of what happened, it's allowed me to better cope with how I need to heal these things. Because I mean, every healing process is going to be different, and I've had to self-learn mine, especially with these memories. I think I've only told my GP, who then moved states, so it's been quite heavy. But you know, he could recount for me that at that time, when I the time that I've lost in a disassociated state, it wasn't that I'd just fallen asleep, I'd actually reverted back to that age, and I thought that I was that 5-year-old child in danger, and I was reacting in a way that I wanted to react in that situation but didn't, because I was a child. So, you know, I was throwing punches and pushing, and just what I would do in a circumstance if that had happened to me at an older age. But obviously, being a kid, I felt so angry and so upset, but I couldn't process that emotion because too much was happening at that stage. So I locked up that reaction. I just became numb. And I think that described me through a lot of my childhood. I was a very happy kid that always had a smile on my face. but I didn't have any other emotional responses to me. I don't really remember crying as a kid. I only remember having two extremes, which were ridiculously happy that it seemed like I'd eaten a ton of sugar, and smiley, and then I was just angry. And that was it. I didn't have all the other emotional responses that a normal child would have. I didn't have fear, I didn't have sadness, I didn't have care, really. I didn't have need. I never felt like I needed my mum and their dad. I didn't want to show them love and affection. And of course that's changed as I've gotten older. I'd speak to my parents quite regularly and I could now say I love you to them. But as a child, I didn't give them that child that needed them. You know, I never hugged them or missed them at the first day of school. I never wanted to come home and give them a hug. I was just a very independent child. And between the happy and anger, I was just quiet. I was very introverted, which is funny because people meet me and they think that I'm an extrovert, but I think it's a coping mechanism. I learn how to talk to people and I'm almost a chameleon that can have a conversation with anyone because I'd rather be talking about you than me. I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing. It's definitely aided me in starting my own businesses. Which is another thing that has happened in the last year of my life, and I guess we'll deal with work in another podcast. But it's also shown me a lot of why I am the way I am. And it's allowed me to, I guess, be more of my true self. So revert back to that kind of introverted state and not be worried about if people ask me questions that I don't want to answer, or if people think that I'm strange for not wanting to go out on the weekends or just work all the time. It's allowed me to grasp that sense of myself and be okay with it, rather than having to put up this pretense of the social butterfly or the one who can just talk to everyone, which I did my fair share of in the last year, and I've truly found myself exhausted and depleted from doing so because I didn't stay true to myself, because I was reverting back to a coping mechanism of, I guess, hiding under the blanket and pretending everything was okay by pretending to be someone else. And I think one of the biggest things that people say, which I believe to an extent, is fake it till you make it. But again, I did that for so long that I was just hiding my true self, and I was allowing myself to become someone that I wasn't, because I felt like it was easier than dealing with what I had to deal with. And my partner's been amazing. It's definitely been great to have a physical presence there to make me feel grounded and safe when I can't make myself. But, I mean, it's just something else to have to deal with. It's something that you have to fight, because that person can't be in your emotional state or can't be in your head. And as amazing as it's been, a lot of those battles I've had to fight myself and deal with the fact that that is my truth and that is where I come from, and that is unfortunately what happened to me, and nothing can change that. So I had to learn to deal with it. And I mean, I'll touch base on this more and how I coped and how I kind of dealt with it in another podcast, but yeah, dealing with that and building a relationship, that was quite interesting. that was a whirlwind, and it wasn't easy on either of us, because not only was I blanking out complete sections, I was I guess, going into a defense mechanism and shutting down while trying to build a relationship with someone new, which doesn't always come easy for someone with borderline. But I knew I really cared about this one. And I had to learn from some of my old mistakes. So again, one in particular, one past relationship, which I am utterly sorry, of course, but I really learnt from, was to not repeat the mistakes. And when I did see myself repeating similar patterns, to kind of intervene and allow myself to be vulnerable when I was shut down, to allow myself to be me when I was trying to hide it, to allow myself to just let in love, which is something that I am terrible at, because obviously an early message I've told myself is that I'm not deserving of love. And although that wasn't a great time in my life and I didn't do great things, and I was not a great person to this particular person, I think I did take a lot of what had happened and try to remove myself from that particular state and that wanting to... Sorry, I had to stop recording there because, as you can probably hear, there's a lot of nature where I live now, and my neighbor's dog decided to start barking. Anyway, so I've now had to, or over the last year, I've had to constantly remind myself of where I had been and how that previous relationship had ended, and where I wanted this one to kind of go, and who I wanted to be, you know, rather than allowing myself to fall into the same patterns and routines, because it was easier and safer, and almost safeguarding not only my mental space, but safeguarding my inner child from hurt. I had to learn how to be vulnerable, and I think that is the hardest thing I've ever had to do, was allow myself to allow not only someone new, someone I didn't know at all prior to us meeting and going on our first date, but allowing him to provide me with a safe place and not reject it. And I mean, as much as I've made and implemented changes in my behaviors and in my emotional responses, there are still times, there are still days, there are still weeks where I am highly unstable, where I am so on the verge of an emotional breakdown that he has to change his response mechanisms because I'm not seeing clarity on how to change mine. And it's a work in progress, but we've done all right. And that's just a little snippet of what's happened for me in the last year at least. I think I've kind of hinted here and there, I've moved, I've started my own businesses, and they're all things that we're going to speak about in my upcoming podcast. Definitely understanding myself a little more. I think that's why I'm back here, because I finally feel good and ready to talk about it, to talk about who I am and show you guys a side of me that's not just the vulnerable side that I've shown you in the past, but the side of me that can not only understand and break down what I'm going through, but who I am as a person, what has driven me, what drives me, what keeps me grounded, what I've used, what techniques have worked for me in overcoming my childhood trauma and the hurt of my inner child, and allowing me to build a stable relationship and a stable foundation for a future. And finally believing that I have a future, and not seeing the end, not seeing, I guess, not living up to the narrative of the fact that I'm not going to live past 30, because that's no longer my narrative, and that's been something extremely big that I've overcome in the last year. Understanding that I have a whole other story to tell, and just because I'm not living up to the one I've always told myself, it doesn't mean I'm failing. And I know that sounds almost, I guess a lot of people say too much, but it's the truth. That there was a time in my life, and for the majority of my life, I told myself the story that I wouldn't be here past 30. And it does feel like failing, or it did feel like failing, to not live out that story, because I'd already told so many people, or I was letting myself down by changing the story that was weak. But I don't think that's too much. I think that is a truth of mental health. I think that is something that a lot of people feel, like they're letting themselves down if they don't live up to a story that they've told themselves. Like they're not being true to themselves if they're not living through the hurt of the inner child. And for anyone who has been there and is coming out of it, or is understanding it, or is just trying to change the story, honestly, congratulations, because it is fucking hard, and I'm still doing it. I still have to wake up every morning and change my thought from I'm going to die today to what am I going to do today? We'll leave that one here, guys, but I'll be back every week on Wednesdays recording and posting, and hopefully I get some responses. Always happy to hear some questions. We'll do some Q&As on an upcoming podcast, and I hope you guys enjoy the next season of my journey in articulating BPD and me. Thank you.